My name is Michael. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Michael.
And I'm just a finite speck in the infinite creation of a higher power. I say thank you for having me here. It's an honor to be here. It's an honor to be invited to this meeting that I came to some time ago, and my sponsor at the time, was one of the founding members here, and it was it's just a special place in my heart. It's also an honor to be in front of some of the other guests that are here, the friends that I'm just starting to meet, and the ones that I've known for a little while that are coming out to support. It really means a great deal, and it's an honor to be in front of some of the other founding members of this group. It means a lot. I'm just going to say another prayer, and that is, God, we thank you for the power to be searching, fearless, and moral. Please help us to shed a light on all the dark areas in our lives. Help us to see where we are selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and frightened. Today, yesterday, and the days leading up, forward. I ask you, dear God, to please remove whatever is blocking me from these people. Please, dear God, please remove whatever is blocking these people from me. And most importantly, dear God, please remove whatever is blocking us all from you, so we can have an open heart, an open mind, and a new experience with you, God, right here, right now, in this moment.
Amen.
If anyone's been paying attention, and I don't expect anybody to be, but all the previous weeks, I was saying a form of a set-aside prayer. And each week I was saying a set-aside prayer about a very specific thing, right? Either my physical powerlessness after I start to drink, lay aside whatever I know about my mental obsession sober. We talked about laying aside my need for power, right? Dear God, please lay aside everything I think I know about the unmanageability of my spirit, right? Dear God, please lay aside everything I think I know about the failure of my life on my will, right? And these are all the versions of the lay aside prayer that one of my sponsors had shown me to pray each time we're going over a certain portion of the book. But now we're at the fourth step. We've made a third step decision, right? We talked last week about that decision and how we launched into a program of action, right? But now, I'm no longer asking God to lay aside. At this point in the book, I am now accessing power. At this point in time, now it's, thank you, God, for the power to be searching, fearless, and moral. It's one of the prayers that my sponsor had asked me to write on the top of all of my inventory papers. Thank you, God, for the power to be searching, fearless, and moral. There's other prayers, right? Please show me the truth. For various other things, maybe they'll come up. I will say, just as a reminder, this is a lot of material here. And you're all having your own experience with a fourth step, or your own ideas about a fourth step, and about these pages in particular that we may discuss. I just want to make it very clear that I am definitely going to forget some things. I'm definitely not going to mention some things. You may be saying to yourself, oh, he forgot this, or he should have said something about that. And like I've said before, you're right. That should be mentioned too, right? This is just my experience with a little bit of time that I've had to, pray and meditate on this stuff, and just a little bit of time that we have to talk about it. These pages, 63, 64, 65, 66, to the end of this chapter, 69, I like it a lot. And one of the reasons why I like them a lot is it gets very specific. The directions get very specific. Very little wiggle room from my understanding and interpretation of how this this step should be done. Was done. and was done by me, right? Now, I understand that people may have experiences where they can take a certain aspect of this and bring it into, you know, elongate it and use other things, and I have experience with that too, right? But I love it because it gets very specific. For a guy who, I'm a guy who doesn't manage well in gray, I like black and white. Black and white makes sense to me. Right and wrong, good and bad, like very clear definitions of where, you know, of where the strike zone is and everything like that makes sense to me. I work well around that. I'm not a guy who does well with gray. I'm not a guy who deals well with ambiguity and ambiguous directions, because I will take them and use them to my selfish desires almost all the time. You give me some gray space, and I'm going to step on the lines. I'm going to find where the black ends up eventually. And all the time, I know I'm in the black. But because you gave me some gray, I'll use that. Right? So that's why I like this, these pages. It gets really specific. Not a lot to dream about. All right. But the first thing is a question to ask. And you know, remember, last week we did the third step prayer, and then we immediately started talking about making a list for inventory. Right? We launch right away. When I do this step, I do a third step with a guy. I'm handing him a pen. I'm handing him a paper, and I'm asking him to start making a list. Right? That's the way it was done for me. That's the way I do it with guys. I show, you know, just by action, we are now launching, and that means we're going to start this stuff right away. You know, you got more work to do after you leave me tonight, but this is the deal. But here's a question. Why am I doing this? Right? Why am I doing this? Like, why am I going to get this far and do this? For those especially who may not have experience with any of this stuff or are just coming in tonight, right? Let's go to page 64. It'll give me some, answers here. On page 64, though our decision is a vital and crucial step, it has very little permanent effect unless at once followed up by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which are blocking us off from God. Right? This is why I do this. I need to face what is bothering me, and I need to be rid of. Right? I mentioned before, right? Oh, well, here. It'll tell me here some of these days. Our liquor is but a symptom. Right? So, the alcohol is just a symptom of this thing. Right? From my experience, right, it's not the alcohol that's the problem. It's all the things inside of me that I'm pouring the alcohol on top of. It's all the things inside of here that I'm pouring the alcohol on top of. It's the things that, you know, either make me restless, irritable, and discontent, or I think makes me restless, irritable, and discontent, that I pour the alcohol on top of to try to treat that, those feelings, right? You know, we've talked about the resentment, the fear, you know, the not feeling right. You know, I told you I got problems just doing Thanksgiving dinner. I got problems showing up to the little kids' birthday parties and stuff like that, right? You know, liquor is just a symptom. I'm doing this to face and be rid of these things that have been haunting me my whole life. Why I didn't feel right when my parents moved me from Brooklyn, New York to Middletown, New Jersey, right? Why I can't, sit on the soccer field and not want to just kill the guy across who stole the ball from me, right? You know, why I can't get over the fact that, she left me or she went with another guy, you know? And even though that may have been 10 years ago or 20 years ago or whatever it is, I still can't deal with it, right? So I am doing this to face and be rid of what's blocking me off from God, what's blocking me off from this power, what's blocking me off from healthy relationships with other people, what's blocking me off from the guy that I want to be, what's blocking me off from, you know, my mom, my dad, you know, my family members, you know, work, doing my work the way I want to do my work, my dreams. I want to face and be rid of the things that are blocking me off from this stuff. I remember when I came into the rooms and they showed me this thing on the wall, whatever. I remember I was at a union, at a Vision for You, and I walked up eye to eye with this fourth step. And I didn't know anything really a lot about a lot of stuff, right, at that point in time. I still don't know a lot about a lot of stuff at this point in time. But at that point in time, I looked at that thing and I said, I want to do that. I want to do that searching and fearless moral inventory because I want to know why I'm like this. I want to know what's wrong with me. Right? And at this point in time, I had a few days, without a drink in me. And now, you know, I'm still carrying on in all the behaviors that I'm not crazy about. I still got all the crazy thoughts, you know, that I can't deal with. I mean, I still can't ride around in the car by myself without turning the music loud just to shut up some of the voices and arguments I'm having with the invisible people in my car. Right? So we have to get down to causes and conditions, right? We have to get down to column 2 and column 3. We'll describe that in a little bit. Okay, another reason why I'm doing this, is a little bit further down on page 64, second paragraph there. Taking a commercial inventory, taking an inventory, is a searching and fearless process, fact-finding and fact-facing process, right? It's a searching and fearless process. It is in an effort to discover the truth about what's going on inside here, right? I've got a lot of stories. I got a lot of stories about why I got kicked out of college. I got a lot of stories why she left me. I got a lot of stories about why my mom is the way she is. I got a lot of stories about why my father doesn't do this. How my life would be better if I just got a break. How my life would be better if you just lay off my back. How my life would be better if she would just, like, you know, stop nagging me. Or whatever the story is, right? You know? I got a lot of stories. You know? Now, some of these stories might be true, right? But some of them, you know, may not be. And I can't, really, to be honest with you, I'm not sure. I may have mentioned to you before, when I came in here, I thought my girlfriend was sleeping with the Freehold Police Department. All of them. Right? And on my way to her house with the Freehold cop behind me, and I'm having this thought about the other cop being at the house having sex with her, right? I'm thinking, well, that's probably kind of ridiculous. They can't all be having sex with her, right? Because, you know, one of them's behind me or whatever. But, you know, so there's this idea of truth, but, you know, she's probably doing it with one of them, right? But that's what's going on in my head, right? I got a lot of stories. I need to discover the truth about what's going on here. I also need to discover the truth about the, as it says, one object is to disclose the damaged or unsaleable goods and to get rid of them promptly without regret. Meaning, I need to disclose what else is wrong with me. What else is wrong about my behavior? What else is wrong with my thinking? What else is wrong with my belief systems? Right? The things that I, the moral codes by which I live by. Right? I want to disclose what's damaged inside of me and unusable, and I want to get rid of them without any regret. Does anybody want to do that? Get rid of the fear, get rid of the anxiety, get rid of the delusions, get rid of the anger, get rid of the dishonesty, get rid of the stories, get rid of the trauma, get rid of the things that happened to you when you're 3 or 5, the things that you did to somebody else when they were 3 or 5, or whatever the story is, right? To face and be rid of it so it's no longer haunting. Let me tell you, that's a good reason for me. Right? This is why I want to do it. Oh, another thing is I'm a maniac. Right? I'm a maniac. I'm a maniac with a drink. I'm a maniac without a drink. I'd like to be a gentleman. To be honest with you, that's why I came to AA. I mean, they didn't say it was a gentleman's club outside of the door or anything like that. But let me tell you, you know, I wanted to be a gentleman. I couldn't be. You know, I couldn't have a relationship and just be a good guy, a nice guy, you know, a guy who opens doors, a guy who isn't objectifying, a guy who hasn't having secret affairs in his mind, or, you know, things with the television and the internet and all this other stuff. I just want to be like a normal guy with in a relationship and with normal people. And, you know, my whole life I wanted to be a member of the Keatons, right? You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to be a member of the Keatons, right? You know, what the hell is that? Huh? Family ties, right? I wanted to be a member of Family Ties, right? Where mom and dad are kissing and, you know, we get in fights and argue, but it all comes down. You could be a liberal and you could be a conservative, but we still all get along and it's a great family and, you know, all this other stuff. I wanted that. And that was one of my stories. Oh, mom and dad aren't Elise and Mr. Keaton, right? So my life sucks. My mom and dad aren't Ward and June Cleaver. My life sucks. You know, my mom and dad aren't like, you know, the Waltons, right? Or so-and-so's father around the corner, mother around the corner, right? I want their family. I want their situation, right? So another reason why I do it is because I'm a maniac, and I'm also a maniac with a drink, right? Okay. But where's the hope, right? Let's see. There's got to be some hope here about this. Let's see. Page 66. Okay. We turned back the list, for it held the key to the future. All right. First of all, right here, it's telling me that I'm going to have a future. I'm a guy who didn't imagine life past 30. I really thought I was going to be dead by 30. I am surprised that I'm here today too, because every way which way I've wrapped out my life experience, I'd be dead by 40. Right? I didn't imagine it. And I tried killing myself a couple times too to make sure that would happen. Right? But I couldn't imagine these things. And here they're telling me, right, this maniac with fear and anger and all this other stuff, that I'm going to have a future. And that this step is going to be the key to my future. Right? One thing that my sponsor has me write here is the key to the future that I get from this inventory is what will set me free. So just imagine that. You can take this fourth step, all of this writing that comes up, the stuff that we're talking about over the next couple of weeks, the stuff that you're going to experience with your sponsors, the stuff that you have experienced, or the stuff that you want to experience because you've left some stuff off of your previous inventories or whatever the story is, or you discovered some new things about yourself and you want to have a new experience. Whatever you write, imagine it all being compiled into one little key. You stick it into a door. You walk through this door, and you're a free man. That's pretty cool. They're telling me that if I do this, I'm going to be free. And I've been a slave to my emotions. I've been a slave to my feelings. I've been a slave to my fears. I've been a slave to what you think of me. I've been a slave to what society says and thinks. Right? And I've been a slave to substance. Right. Another way for me to have how I look at this is like having a roadmap for my life. This fourth step has been a roadmap for me on how to go out and behave in the future. Right? I don't want to. If I'm having these, you know, domestic issues, then I want to do this and this. If I'm having these types of situations at the home, I don't want to behave this way or that way. I get in these books of inventory I've written and all the other inventories that I have, right? This is my roadmap. Because I don't know how to live life. I'm not good at it. Does anybody have that experience, or am I just the only one? I mean, I don't know how to do things, right? And so I need a roadmap. You know, sometimes I need a roadmap. How to show up at Thanksgiving. You know, how to show up. How to sponsor another guy. How to make coffee. How to make dinner. How to go on a date. You know? And how to approach a woman on a dating site. I don't know how to do that stuff. I'm afraid. She's not going to like me. How's this going to work out? Or then, all right, I got a good hook to get her in. What do I do to, you know, to get the, you know, the next piece of the puzzle? Right? Well, how do I do that, right? And then let's say I get that. Well, now what? Now it's the next day. Now it's tomorrow. Now it's a week later. How do I maintain that? I'm not good at any of these things, right? I may be good at getting her. I may be good at keeping her. Now I'm not good at letting her go. You know, I got all these issues, right? This inventory is my roadmap. It is the key to my future. And I love the idea of being told that I got a future when I come in here. I'm a mess, okay? And this key thing, they get into this a little bit here with this key thing, and all throughout this book, they talk about buildings, right? They talk about all these building analogies, right? They talk about a cornerstone. They talk about a keystone. They talk about an archway, right? They talk about cement and all this other stuff, right? Another way to look at least myself, right, when I walk in here is, if I am going to use this analogy of a building, okay, let's say I have a piece of property. On this piece of property, I have a building. In this building, in this house, it's a house that I inherited maybe, or it's a house that, you know, is the best that I could get, whatever it is. I'm in this house. And, you know, I'm not a plumber, I'm not a electrician, I'm not a carpenter or any of these other things. I don't know how to kind of do house management. Let's say the roof of my house gets a leak. gets a buildup of water, right? And let's call that water a resentment. Stuff my mother did when I was a kid, right? You know, the things I did to her when I was a kid, you know. Fear of what others think of me. Fear of not being loved for who I am. Fear of marrying my mother. Fear of marrying my father. Fear of becoming my mother. Fear of becoming my father. Fear of my mother and father dying. All these different things. Imagine just the weight of all of this water on my, like, you know, city apartment roof just starts to come in a little bit on this building and slowly starts to leak, right? Gets into that area between the roof, they call it, I think, the Suffolk or whatever. You know, it gets into here, right? And slowly but surely, I'm sitting in the bottom of the basement and I'm just drinking. I'm sitting in the bottom of the basement and I'm just ignoring it. I'm sitting in the bottom of the basement and I'm telling you stories about why I got this leak. And I'm telling you that, you know, I'm insisting the city of New York needs to come and fix this thing or I got a problem, right? And now let's say I notice some termites, right, or some ants or some other things. And slowly but surely, after years and years of the different stories, of the different resentments, of the different fears, of the different issues that I'm dealing with, that this just house just slowly becomes this water kind of seeps in. And while it seeps in to this one particular level, it's developing, sitting for years and years and years, and it gets a stink, right? It gets a stink, it gets bugs, it gets fungus, it gets an infection, whatever's going on, it gets brown, it gets ugly, right? And I'm just still like sitting in the basement, drinking some booze, turning up the volume of the Yankee game and just ignoring it all. I'm doing nothing about it. I'm going outside and, you know, you who has a nicer house, screw you because you got the money or whatever. Your father gave you a break on that house. You know, my house would be fixed if I got a break in my life. He's got a wife. She takes care of things like that. I don't know anything like that. My father never taught me how to be a plumber. My father never taught me how to be a carpenter or whatever. These bugs aren't termites. You know, the guy next door planted them on me, right? This is the way I come in here with all of these stories. And slowly but surely, that let's say I live in the basement and there's the top floor and then there's a second floor and then there's a, you know, the basement floor. And all of a sudden, this filth water that's been sitting for years just comes crashes down into the next floor. And all of the things and all the objects appear to be ruined on that top floor. And now it's seeping into the other floor. Now it's brown filth seeping in through the house. Right? God bless you. Brown filth seeping through the house. It smells bad. It's awful. Whatever. Now, who's going to come over and visit me? Right? But only other swamp people. Right? Only other people who can put up with a smell like that. Right? And now what is my view of me? It's even worse than it was before. Because now I'm the swamp creature. I'm the filthy swamp house guy that everyone's making fun of on the street because my house is a piece of garbage and whatever like that. Screw you. All this other stuff. Right? But now I'm inviting over dirtier people. And only that's because that's all I can get. And at a point in time too, it's what I'm attracted to because now that house has become a part of me. Right? And it's you know, what they call it, settles, right? And there's little cracks and all this other stuff. And I keep ignoring it, I keep ignoring it. Well, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, right, is kind of like doing a demolition on that house, right? It's kind of like tearing this stuff down. First step is quite a bit like that, right? You know, first, it's a take a look. Finley, you got a crappy house. Finley, you're not doing anything about it. Finley, you know, maybe in 1977 you needed to fix a leak and maybe the city of New York was to blame or whatever. For the next 30 years, you did nothing. For the next 30 years, you've been blaming everybody else. For the next 30 years, you've been walking around like Ebenezer Scrooge. Screw you, humbug, I'm no good, you know, all this other stuff, right? The first step is a little bit like that. Right? You got a problem. You're walking around in filth. Your life is kind of filth. What are you going to do? First step kind of smashes through some of these things. Right? Second step is a little bit like hope. Hope that maybe I might have a house like yours. Right? Maybe I might get the house that my great-great-grandfather envisioned when he built that house. Right? Or what my mom and dad envisioned when they gave that house to me. Right? And it's kind of like, you know, one step is after another. It's kind of like about demolishing that house to a ground level where we can start again and build a new structure on it. It's my property. I'm not going to sell it. Right? It's my thing. You know, I can't have your property. I can't live in your house. Right? It's mine. Right? These steps are about demolishing the house, helping me. And this particular step helps me to decide, like, this beam is good. You know, I could treat this beam. I could shine it up a little bit. We can use this piece of wood here. These little pieces of bricks or whatever, these still hold up. We could use them again. And for me, in an idea with this whole thing, this fourth step is a little bit about finding out which pieces of wood are good, which pieces of wood are total crap and need to go, what design of how the house needs to be designed a little bit differently, and also stick in some a bit of your heart and your dream and your love about what you would like to envision this thing to look like. Maybe a little bit of step three, right? As well as down the road, right? So this building stuff is going on all throughout this thing. And it's kind of this thing that came to me in meditation today, and I'm sorry for going on a little bit about it, but that's the deal, right? But there's a warning also that comes along with step four. You want to read it? It's on page 58. They're talking about 12 steps, right? Third paragraph, I don't know. At some of these we balked. And I'm going to read to you how it was written in the original manuscripts. Right? At some of these you may balk. You may think you can find an easier, softer way. We doubt you can. With all earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the start. Some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, that old piece of crap house. Right? And the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Okay, smash it. Okay, tear it down. There's a prayer that I was told over and 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 over again to say over and over again, and it's called like this: Dear God, please smash my ego. And I said that prayer over and over again throughout all of these first few step processes. Dear God, please smash my ego. I need, and what does smash mean? Smash means to be broken into so many pieces that it cannot be put back together again in the same way. That's what I need to happen to my house. That's what I need to happen with my ego. That's what I need to happen for me to have this experience, this new house, this dream, this hope. Because if this thing is to be put back together to the way it was, it's just nothing but garbage. It's not working. Right? So they're telling us, and what does balked mean? Balked is to stop in one's course and obstinately refuse to move or act. Got that? I know it's a good baseball reference. I understood it as a baseball guy. A guy who's holding the ball and he's not putting it in, or he's making like he's going to make a move, he doesn't. Right? This is to stop in one's course and obstinately refuse to move or act. With that obstinacy, what do you got? You got a guy who actually knows this is the answer. A guy who actually knows, if I do this, this might work. But I refuse to do anything about it. I refuse to move forward. I've been convinced that I'm an alcoholic. I've been convinced I got this mental obsession. I've been convinced that I got a spiritual malady, restlessness, irritability, discontentment. I'm totally, you know, signed up 100% when I put this stuff in my system. I'm going to drink again. I'm going to drink more. I don't know when it's going to be. I'm taken through this process. Some guys take me to some meetings and other stuff like that. Here you go. Here's a four-step. Make a list. And all of a sudden, I stop. That's obstinacy. Refusing to act when I know what's right for me. You know what else it's called? Sloth. Right? I know what's good for me and I still don't do it. This is, and they're telling you, right? In the very first manuscript, you might find an easier, softer way, but we don't think you can. And chances are, the sick ones are the ones who say, I would much rather it's easier, softer way, but I've tried them all. Let's try this crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. Right? They said, some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil, zero. until we let go absolutely. We talked about that last week. Surrender. Give up. I'm done. Right? Let me just do it. Let me just give it a shot. Remember, we're dealing with booze. Oh, or it says, remember, you are dealing with alcohol, cunning, powerful, and baffling. Without help, it is too much for you. That's what it says in the book. That's what the original guys had wrote, right? Who are those people? You know, the recovered alcoholics. But there is one who has all power. His name, that one is God. You must, says, find him now. Doesn't say, may you. In the original manuscripts, these guys are like, you must find him. We don't think you can find any of this off their way. We dare you to try it, but we don't think you can. We doubt it. You better, you know, you're going to need to do this, right? Without help, it's too much for you. Here's the question. Is that true for me? Is alcohol so powerful that I need help with it? If that answer is yes, you're in a good place. You know, move forward. They're just telling you to take a pen and paper and write some stuff in a book. Here's another warning, page 17. Okay. Page 17, second paragraph, somewhere towards the middle. It says, we are like passengers of a great liner. The moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Okay, we, the alcoholics, where? In these meetings. Okay, we are like people who survived a shipwreck, right? They give us this image, you know, the rich people, the poor people, you know, the black people, the white people, the Chinese people, all sorts of different people are in here, right? And we've got this common problem, alcohol, right? And we're kind of like guys who have survived the shipwreck, you know, oh gosh, great job, you know, thank you for putting out the rafts. I can't believe we did it. Thank God, you know, kissing the ground. Hey, what's your phone number? I want to call you. You know, what's your number? I want to write you some letters. I'm going to keep you on my Christmas card list and all this other stuff, right? This is like this great joyous camaraderie that happens when, you know, we have a couple of days without booze, a couple of weeks without booze, this camaraderie that happens in our fellowship. But unlike the feelings of the ship passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. So they're telling you that those people who survive that and you know, don't do anything more, right? That feeling subsides. That joy and camaraderie and everything else subsides. Has anybody ever gone to a meeting and been like, whoa, I needed that meeting. Wow, I feel so great. Wow, that was a good meeting. Like, thank God. I'm going to, you know, that meeting's good. I'm going to go there next week. You know? That's some good stuff. The share was just what I needed to hear, right? And then what happens? To some of us, to me, for sure, you wake up the next morning and you want to kill yourself. Then you wake up the next morning and you're thinking of a drink. You wake up next morning and you're stuck with the wife that you don't know how to deal with. You know, you wake up the next morning and you still got the fear and all this other stuff. That joy and camaraderie goes away. Right? They're talking about people who just come to meetings only and don't do anything else. People who just hang around in a fellowship and expect somehow that this fellowship is going to get me sober. I'll tell you where. Here is the thing. Here's the warning. It's coming up. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement that binds us. This one element, the fellowship. Right? But that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. So they're telling you a warning about the fellowship. They're telling you a warning about just don't drink and go to meetings. They're telling you a warning about, you know, just don't drink until your ass falls off. You know, they're telling you something about, you know, 90 meetings in 90 days, that'll fix your problems. You know, oh, if it hasn't fixed your problems, why don't you go to three meetings a day for 90 days, right? All of these things, right? The fellowship is good. It's good to help me, you know, like I can talk to you. I can tell you about some of my problems, some of the stuff I'm going with. I can tell you about what brought me in here. You can tell me about your experience. It's great. You might help me identify with, okay, I'm in the right spot. He thinks the way I do. We drank like that. I know him from this watering hole and this, that, and the other stuff. Like, good, right? But what happens after the diner? What happens after come early, leave late? I'm stuck with Finley. I'm stuck with me. And it's not too good, right? Because I still got the fear. I still got the delusions. I still got the story. I'm still going back to the crap house. Even if I took siding and put it up in front of that house just to convince you all that it looked good. It's still crap inside. That's what I do. Right? It's still crap inside. They're telling you that that in and of itself, in case you're one of the, you know, in case you're coming to these meetings and you're not feeling this joyousness, this camaraderie that they're talking about every day or often, or you're not having a way to deal with life's problems like going to the kid's birthday or Thanksgiving and all this other stuff, you probably need that other element in the powerful cement that binds us. And what is this powerful cement? Just to make it more clear, the powerful cement that binds us is a mixture of equal parts of fellowship, friends, meetings, diners, hanging out, and this book, right? This book, Our Common Solution, all right? That's the powerful cement. So for me, tear down the house, right? And let's start building a new foundation of this thing, you know? Let me build a foundation. And here's the question. Am I trying to build a house on sand? Am I trying to build a house with sticks? Or am I using cement and brick and an architecture, you know? Right? Am I using solid ground here? Because some people tell us what it's like to build a house on sand. It doesn't hold up too long, right? What it's like to build a house of straw, sticks, whatever. It's that cement, that powerful brick house that withstands all of the wind and the sure trials that are to come. Right? That's what these steps do. That's why I do it. And it's just this whole image again. But that's the warning, right? And here's another thing. Have I been that guy? Am I that guy now? Did I have a 12-step experience, but now I'm kind of just like hitting some meetings every now and again? You know, do I need one of those elements of the cement? Am I showing up to meetings once a month? Am I showing up once a year? Am I just showing up and getting my coin and taking off, but I'm still like, you know, distressed over relationship stuff, financial stuff, all this other thing, right? Here's the warning, right? That just coming to meetings is not going to solve my problem. I need to do more. It's telling me this in and of itself would not hold us together as we are now joined. If they just can't. Listen, these guys pulled a drunk out of a hospital bed. Come over to my house, Bill. Hey, Bill, Bob, come on over. I'm making great coffee, right? You're going to love this coffee. Hey, my wife's making crumb cake. Why don't we come over? We have some coffee, some crumb cake, right? The guy in the bar said, hey, this is pretty good. You know, I like that, whatever. Oh, he's funny. Yeah, he's kind of a lunatic like me too. That's great. We all get along well. They're telling you, if we just got together at people's houses and made coffee, this thing would have not stuck together. We needed to do these 12 steps. We needed to do this inventory. We needed to be fact-finding and fact-facing about this process. According to them, right? And also, according to them, the people that we're talking about on the page 17, nearly all have recovered. Recovered. We talked about that in week one. They have solved the drink problem, okay? These are the people that are giving us these instructions, right? The people who solved the drink problem, not their opinions of the drink problem, the people who are no longer feeling this way, these are the steps they took. This is the deal they did. So I got to ask myself some more questions. On page 66, it's plain to me that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and happiness. Is it plain to people here that a life when it includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness? What's your experience? Futility, pointless. Right? Pointless. Unhappiness. Do you believe to the I love this. What's coming up here? I love it. Right? Do you believe that to the precise extent that you permit these resentments, do you squander hours that might have been worthwhile? What are they telling me? All right, when I first come in here, my permission slips had all been written up and torn up and thrown in the trash, right? When I come in here, all of the resentments and the fears or whatever, they just run me. I'm not permitting them. But now, after having a 12-step experience, after having a 4-step experience and a 5th step and a 9th step and these other experiences that are down the road, right? It's telling me to the exact extent that I permit these resentments, do I squander the hours that might have been worthwhile for who? Me. Right? So it's even telling me, if I'm experiencing some resentment now, I'm still getting something from it. I think it's a great deal, and I'm totally permitting it to happen. I'm allowing it. When I came in, I had, like I said, I wasn't permitting it. It did whatever it wanted to me. Alcohol definitely dragged me around to the point where I could not stop hating the Red Sox or whatever else. Yeah. Yeah, but now I can do it in a healthy way. You know what I mean? Like, you know, with some cut, you know, like, you know. And I got some inventory here to show you what the unhealthy way was for me. All right? But to the, is my hope in the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience? Do I believe, is that your hope? Meaning, 12 steps. Do you have hope that this might work for you? Okay? Have I found that these resentments are fatal? Well, just from my experience, the holes in my my girlfriend's wall, right? The marks on her body, the scratches on my face, right? The dents and the scratches in the car, the ones that I know about, the ones that I don't know about, the ones that the law said to me, hey, you, this is not good, you know? Them trying to save my life from reckless behavior, right, are showing me how these resentments have been grave, right? Because let me tell you, it may not make sense sitting on the side of the road, you know, while the cop is asking me to do the finger and the eye thing and the leg stand, you know, alphabet thing. But guess what? I ran to the bar because my mother got that pitch in her voice. I ran to the bar because she brought up how much money I'm making. You know, I ran to the bar because of what my father said or didn't say when I was a kid. I ran to the bar because the way my brother treated me from 0 to 10. You know, I ran to the bar because he only started changing a different way because of what she did. Right? I had all this stuff, all of these stories. I ran to the bar because I had that house. So those resentments is the reason why, right? Do I believe it to be a business of resentments being infinitely grave, meaning gonna die, matter of life? Have you found them to be fatal? Or at the very least, do you think it might be a possibility that they're fatal, that they're not working out good for you? That when harboring such feelings of resentments, I am shut off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Harboring such angry feelings, not only such... shut off from the sunlight of the Spirit. I'm shut off from mom. I'm shut off from dad. I'm shut off from society. Right? I'm the guy who likes to hate society. I definitely do. I like to turn on the news and tell everybody why they're crazy. Right? And I also like to turn on ESPN and do the same thing with all of them too. Right? So it's not, you know, not just politics. Whenever I can turn on the religion channel, do the same thing. Doesn't matter what's on TV. Right? Unless it's the Keatons, and even then, chances are something's going to make me feel insecure, right? Because again, it's the Keatons. I don't have that. I want to die, right? Do I believe that the insanity of alcohol will return and I will drink again? Do we believe that? Do I believe that the insanity, if I don't deal with these issues of resentments, that this thing will come back and get me again? If I don't believe this, somewhere in the back of my head, I think I'm in control of all of it. Okay. And do I believe that to drink again, I will die? Mm-hmm. Do I believe that if I am to live, I have to be free of anger? Do I believe that the grouch and the brainstorm is not for me, right, or poisonous for us? They may be the dubious luxuries of normal men, but for the alcoholic, these things are poison. All right. Here's another one. 64. Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, yeah, 64. Resentment is the number one offender. Do I believe that? Do I believe that it destroys more alcoholics than anything else? Is that my experience? Do I believe resentment from it stems all form of spiritual sickness? I mean, does it make sense? Right? I mean, a couple weeks ago, I talked about the story about the guy who got visited by three ghosts. That's a guy deep in resentment. That's a guy deep in a story. That's a guy who's got a crappy house who's not willing to take a look at it. Right? That's a guy who needed that first step ghost to come in and say, dude, you ain't going to go. And then that third step ghost that says, listen, this is where your future is going. Right? You know, am I like that guy? Do I see that, where that's at least possibility of where I'm heading in that direction, or where I am that person? Have I not only been mentally and physically ill, but also spiritually ill? Right? Am I doing things that I said I would never do? Do I find myself living against my own moral code, doing against the things mom and dad taught me to be like? Right? Do I believe that? If the answer is yes, and I understand these things, or I'm willing to take a look at some of these things, here is the great part, the directions. Okay? And the directions go like this. In dealing with resentments, we set them out on paper. All right. So, my sponsor made it very clear to me like this. What is a resentment? All right? You know, it could be a deep-seated hatred and stuff like that. Sure. Right? But resent comes from a French term, right? Ressentir, right? And that means to feel again. To feel again. Now, I don't resent this kid, Jeff, who lived next to me when I was 4 years old in Brooklyn. But every time I think of him, up until this point, every time I think of him, I relive that when I saw him again at 10 years old, he wouldn't remember me. This kid was my best friend. This kid was my best friend. When he left, I was crushed. Right? Turns out, my parents, a year later, we move also to Middletown, New Jersey. As it turns out, this guy is in that town. As it turns out, his family is going to our church. You want to know how excited I was to see them? Like, oh my gosh, this is great. This guy, whatever. Where's the kid? I don't know. You know, but every time I'd see the parents, I'd see the brothers and sisters, like, oh, whatever. One day, our parents decide to get together and come over, and we're going to all get together. And I'm like, finally, I'm going to have my friend again, because I'm coming to Middletown, and I'm an alien here. Nobody gets it. Like, this thing is freaked out. New Jersey's like, I don't get it. You know, I mean, I'm totally different than everybody else. Now I'm going to see this kid, Jeff, from Brooklyn, who lived next door to me, and we're going to have fun, we're going to have a good time, we're going to play in the dirt like we did when we were kids. Guess what? Didn't remember me. Didn't know whatever. Hated that kid. I relived that, you know, whenever that thing came up, I remember that feeling, you know, of him not remembering me, right? And it turns out, because we were in the same communities, we didn't go to the same high school or anything like that. He went to the private school, whatever, but oh, he was a jerk. So I'm at the bar, he's a jerk. His friends were jerks. These guys were all a-holes. This is what's going on here. Like, this is what happens because of the kid who got moved without his permission to some other place and doesn't remember me a couple years later. Like, but this is me. I feel that again. I live that again. Right? To feel it again. I'm not walking around going, F this kid every day. I'm not going around trashing his name on, you know, bathroom stalls on the Garden State Parkway or whatever. But I do it to other people. You know what I mean? But, you know, but I didn't do it with him. Right? So I feel it again. That teacher in second grade who leaned over with bad breath and then her necklace came underneath my neck and the way she talked to me in front of the whole class, I feel that again. I remember that. So he also used words like this, pissed off, agitated, annoyed, something that you're talking about over and over again in your mind, right? And this was the rule. This was the rule. I want you to write on top of your page, he said, thank you, God, for the power to be searching, fearless, and moral. And then I want you to do nothing but just write names. Just write names. Just names. Right? And he didn't say, like, and just whatever name comes to you, jot it down. Write the name. Comes down. Don't sit there and say, oh, well, that's Jeff, and I was 4 years old, and of course I'm not mad at him. I mean, he was not his. No. It came down in prayer. I write it down. Right, we'll take a look at it when we get to the next part. If it's something that we keep looking at, right? God will differentiate these things. But if this is supposed to be a spiritual program, if I'm supposed to be on a spiritual path, and if I'm saying a prayer to God as I understand them or don't understand them or whatever the heck it is, and I just say, God, help me make a list, and I just write things down, whatever comes to mind, write it down, 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 write it down. Another thing my sponsor said, which I love him for saying it, my sponsees probably hate it, but it helped me out a great deal. And that was that there is not anything that's too silly, that's too stupid, that's too foolish, that's so insignificant that it doesn't belong on your inventory. Mm-hmm. Right? And I thank God for him saying that. right? Because what happens is, and I see it with guys I work with, my ego wants to write this list so badly. My ego wants to write down, well, I can't really be mad at my brother. I mean, you know, he was such a good guy. I can't be really mad at that teacher with the necklace. I mean, you know, she drank coffee or whatever. Like, you know, no. You know, if it's, because the thing is it may, me, I had to write down here, they asked me also, principles and institutions. I'll give you some working things that was given that to me too. Principles and institutions, but I wrote down the Boston Red Sox. I wrote down the New York Knicks. I wrote down the Red Sox fans. I wrote down the Yankees fans. I wrote down the Philadelphia Eagles, right? I wrote down things like size matters, right? In terms of principles that people live by, right? Size matters destroyed me, right? Not because of a size issue, but because I thought, well, you know, size equals love. Size equals performance. Size equals her, you know, cheating on me or not, right? And her opinions and views of those things. I wrote down things like Al-Qaeda and other things like that, right? You know, principles, institutions, the federal student loans, right? My sponsor said these things aren't silly because they are going to kill me. If I tried to get sober in 2004 without a spiritual program when the Yankees lost 4 games in a row to the Boston Red Sox, I would have killed somebody. Thank God I was drinking. I drank through all of that, you know. But if I was trying to, that'd be another story. Who knows, right? I swore on a bar stool I'll never go back to basketball ever again. You know, screw the Knicks. That's it. I'm done. Whatever. Okay. Do I need to write about my drunken promise to myself on a bar stool one day at a dive bar in Homedale, New Jersey? It was on the list. God put it there. I'm not going to mess with God's ideas, right? And so, please know this. There's nothing too silly or too stupid or too insignificant to not go on your list, right? If it comes up and it's important to you, then it's important to you and it's going to save your life. It's the key to your future, right? That might be one of those bricks that just gets dusted off and gets put back in, right? So, or it's one of those bricks that you get to toss away and never ever deal with ever again. Whatever it is. So, he says to pray, make a list, right? Are you done with your list? Yeah, I'm done with my list. He goes, okay, let's go back to the book here, page 64. He says, oh, and he says we put them on paper, right? It doesn't say we put them through my word processor. It doesn't say we do a spreadsheet. It doesn't say I go to Haldon and go find a copy of a couple of sheets and check them off or whatever. It says we list them on paper, right? Because my sponsor and my experience is something happens between me, God, a pen and a paper every single time I do it. I may be writing one thing and it may be very clear to me, but by the time I'm done, a whole bunch of other things are revealed to me. A whole bunch of memories come back to me. There's something about doing this thing with pen and paper. And for whatever reason, because I heard my sponsor talk a lot, he used to say pencil and paper. So for me, I wrote in pencil. I kind of regret it now because some of it's faded and I can't see and there's parts of the roadmap or whatever, but I don't go down those roads anymore anyhow, so it's cool. But the thing is like I did a lot of stuff in pencil because that's what he's, you know, he said this thing, pencil and paper. So a lot of my stuff was in pencil. But my experience is putting it on paper and having that experience with my own hand, with my own writing down these things and seeing them, fact-facing, fact-finding in my own hand, there's something powerful in that. There's something magical in that. That's been my experience with it anyhow. So he says, we listed them on paper. We include institutions and principles, right? You know, principles might be stuff like 90 meetings in 90 days, right? I looked over my thing. I wrote down about Krausers. Now, I don't even remember it. Today, I'm free of Krausers. I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. But Krausers is on my list. Apparently, what I wrote down, because it says, now what we do, we now ask ourselves why we were angry. Right? So, you know, 4 columns. There's different ways. I could talk about one of the other ways next week. But right now, in 4 columns, that's what I asked to do. Here's a name. In the 2nd column, he just says, write down why you're angry. That's it. Write down where. Say the prayer. right? Thank you, God, for the power to be searching, fearless, and moral. Please let me see the truth. And then just, why am I angry? Why am I angry? For the poor Krausers, every time I went in for, say, milk, obviously the price were changing. Every time I went in there, and I was like, screw you, whatever, and it's because you got this color skin, and you obviously have this kind of religion. Screw all you religion people. Screw all these things. Whatever. Like, I had this definite thing with Krausers, right? That's an institution, right? For an example, right? But thank God, I'm telling you, I don't even remember it at all. I don't remember the guy. I don't even, it's, but I'm, what it is? Put the key in the door. I'm free. Mm-hmm. That's my experience. Free. Free. Thank you, God. So, he says, right, ask ourselves, why are we angry? Now, in most cases, we found that self-esteem, pocketbook, ambitions, personal relationships, security or pride were hurt or threatened or interfered with, right? So that's another column, right? First is who I'm mad at, right? Krausers, say. Boston Red Sox, that poor kid Jeff, right? Not to mention, of course, mom, dad, mm-hmm. right? The church, this church, another church, that faith, those people, those nationalities, that nationalities, the people across the street, the guy next door. I mean, all of that stuff, too, is on there, right? You know, my sponsor says, Finley wrote down about the guy who didn't kick him the ball when he was 3 years old. Mm-hmm. Damn straight. Blocking me off from God. Need to be rid of it, man. You know, it came up in prayer, whatever. That's the way it is. You know? So, third column. It affects my pride, self-esteem, ambition, personal relationships. So, all right, so Jeff, right? Jeff. I'm angry at him. Moved away when I was 4 years old, right? My sponsor told me, keeping it simple, dude, you're not telling me the story. When I was four, it was a sunny day. The garbage guy wasn't collected yet. You know, Jeff and I were playing dice in the curb. I heard from my mother, oh, Jeff is leaving tomorrow, packed away. Like, no. Why am I angry? He moved. He forgot me. He never, ever acknowledged me, ever. Three reasons why I'm angry at this poor kid from 4 years old, right? And then, how is it, what does this affect? Pride. This is the definition, right, that I was working with. Pride is what, oh my God, if anybody ever saw, if anybody ever knew, right? If anybody saw me doing that. If anybody knew. So the pride is what you think. No one should ever see me doing this. No one should ever see me doing that. People shouldn't talk about me like this. Pride. Generally speaking, if it's affecting my pride, it has something to do with what you think of me or what I think you think of me. Mm-hmm. Self-esteem is what I think of me. Okay, he ignored me. He didn't talk to me. He forgot me. He moved. Yeah, this affects my self-esteem. I suck. I'm obviously not a good friend. I'm obviously not a, you know, I'm a dipstick. That's why nobody else is my friends. No one's been my friend, and it started with Jeff. Right? No one's really my friend. Just like him, fair weather dude, took off, totally forgets me, all this other stuff going on all my life. Put in a different name. Here's the story. But that's the gist. This is my self-esteem. Pride, what others think of me. Self-esteem, what I think of me. Right? Ambition, the things that I want. Right? The things that I want, my dreams, my goals. Well, what do I want? I want a best friend. I want a confidant. I want somebody who loves me for me. I want somebody that I can have a cup of coffee with, tell some kind of crazy stuff about my thoughts and my weird dream last night or whatever, and still be liked and loved. I want a best friend. Yeah, that totally affects that. Right? He forgets me. My ambition is to have a best friend. You know, I'm on this planet of aliens in New Jersey, and this guy doesn't remember me. Now what? Mm. Right? Yeah, my ambition is screwed up. What else? Personal relationships. All right? Relationships with family, relationships with friends, relationships with girls, relationships with teachers, you name it. All right, my personal relationships, my friends and families should not treat me like this. My friends and families, family members should treat me this way. No one should ever treat me like that. All right? So yeah, for me, I can totally see how this guy not remembering me affects my personal relationships. Because from there on, moving forward, no other friend was real. You didn't mean it. You didn't mean it when you said you loved me. You didn't mean it when you said I was talented. You didn't mean it when you said I was cool. You didn't mean it when I said a good meeting last night. You didn't mean any of it. She didn't mean it when she said I'm a good lover. She didn't mean any of that other stuff. Oh yeah, that's the next one. Sexual relations. Does it affect my sexual relations? It can. Not just sexual relations, right? Not just does Jeff moving have something to do with my ability to have intercourse or kiss or make out or whatever like that. It also has something to do, for me, my definition given to me by my sponsors, is what do I think a real man is? What do I think a real woman is? Right? Because I got all these codes of what a real man is. Looks like Tom Cruise, acts like Clint Eastwood, cool like Fonzie. All right? Now, this kid, when it turned out, he was a jock, right? He was handsome. He seemed pretty cool. I'm sitting here dying at the bar, him, 20 years later, 30 years later, him not knowing me, it's killing me. Screw this guy. Yeah, whatever. It certainly has some sort of ideas of what I think a real man should be. You know, a real man. You know, obviously, if this kid affecting me or whatever, I'm not Clint Eastwood. I'm screwed. I'm not cool like Fonzie. I'm screwed. No Tom Cruise here. Done. Yeah, affects my sex relations, at least for me. Ambitions, security. What do I need to be okay? I need him to acknowledge me to be okay, right? I need a friend to be okay. I need someone to always be around me to be okay. I need to be acknowledged to be okay. I need to be justified to be okay. I need to, so therefore, I need approval from people to be okay. This affects my security. Right? My own personal security. I'm not okay if he doesn't like me, if she doesn't love me, if they don't say I'm proud of you, if they don't clap at the meeting. This is what goes on. Don't clap. It's not asking for that stuff. No, I'm serious. It's just, this is what the stuff that comes out of my inventory even today. Right? Security, pride, and what's the other one I'm missing? Oh, pocketbook. Right? How does this affect me financially? In this particular situation, I don't have the inventory in front of me, but it's a possibility that I might try to buy whoever is with me a bunch of extra drinks because he's over there, and I need you to see that I'm cooler than him. I need you to see that I'm tougher than him. I need you to accept me. I need you to not run away and move on me. I need you to not ignore me. I need you to remember me. Let's have another drink. Next round's on me. Hey, I got some other stuff. I'll leave it for you in the bathroom. Right? You know, I'm going to get you an extra large Christmas gift. I'm going to remember your birthday. You know, I do crazy stuff like that. It is possible that I can see that how this situation with this kid moving affects me financially. Right? So, next week, we are going to talk about the following direction, which is taking a look at this from another angle. All right? I'm sorry for taking up as much time as I did.